Hey, he's Jim Harden.
This is Blake Giles.
This is Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And we're here to talk about football. It is an exciting time of the year for the high schools now, Jim, with the playoffs starting this Friday night.
It's football weather out there, too, by the way.
It is.
It is nice.
But I understand it's going to get warmer.
It is.
Over the weekend. I think the high Saturday is going to be like close to 70 degrees.
Yeah, which will be nice. Yeah. If it's not humid, it'll be a probably perfect day weather-wise.
There are a number of local schools that will be playing in the playoffs. It's interesting. Clark Central made it into the playoffs, and they got to go all the way down to Effingham County. And they're not expected to win the game. It's really just been almost a great accomplishment for them to just make the playoffs, given what they lost from last year and then the injuries they've had to put up with this year. So kudos to Dave Perno for what they've done this year with getting into the playoffs. I don't know anything about Effingham County. I don't know if you do either. But
I don't either. We're cheering for – it was probably a great coaching job by Perno just to get them to 500 and get them in the playoffs.
It looks like he found a running back at the end of the season. So they got a guy who's putting up some yards. So that would be good. North Oconee and Oconee County are both playing this week. And let's see. North Oconee's hosting Perry. Perry comes in with a 4-6 overall record.
Perry Panthers, we talked about them. They won the state title 2 or 3 years ago, but they will be the underdog in that one.
But, North Oconee kind of limped into the end of the season, partly because of injuries, too, to them. So hopefully they'll be at 100% because they had a week off last week like everybody did, and we'll see if that helps them out. Oconee County has to go on the road up to Northwest Whitfield. Is that up near Rome? Is that where they are?
Closer to Dalton.
Dalton, okay. Yeah. So that's a pretty good trek to make for a football game.
It is. I don't know anything about them either.
Oconee, according to the Maxwell computer, is a 4-point favorite in that game. So maybe they can get a win. Jefferson is supposed to win by 40 against Doherty, who is 2-8
in the playoffs.
How can you be 2-8 and be in the playoffs?
I don't know. I don't like how they arrive at that now. You at least have a winning record getting the playoffs.
Well, of course, the region standings determine that, and I guess Doherty was fourth place in their region. But they're going to start using this power system next year for everybody. In fact, it was a factor this year with Beach High School and Southeast Bullock, and one of them beat the other, and the one that won the game didn't get in, the one that lost the game did get in because of the power rankings. And I don't know that I'm a big fan of these power rankings that they've got in high schools.
Well, we talked about that. I mean, you ought to be able to – the goal ought to be able to win. I mean, everybody can't win a state championship, but, win your region. It used to be North and South Georgia. Mm-hmm. You had to win the quarter, the kind of a sectional.
Then you'd be North Georgia champion, South Georgia champion, all that. And now, you've got Clark Central traveling all the way down to Effingham County and the Winder Bears going down to Brunswick to play a first-round game. I mean, that's hundreds of miles that you're...
That was unheard of 50 years ago. Yeah.
So I'm not exactly a big fan of that. Their whole thought process, I think, is they want to have the best teams at the end of the playoffs. And if somebody finishes fifth in that region and they could be one of the best teams, that's not fair to them. Well, they had their chance to be fourth or better, is what I say. So, whatever. Anyway. But anyway, so there are some schools that have byes this week. Athens Academy still off. They had to play since this would be their third straight week off before they finally play next week. And then Prince Avenue's off this week. Oakthorpe County's playing this week. They're traveling up to the Granite Bowl up in Elberton. You ever been to a game at the
I have Granite been Bowl? To the Granite Bowl in Elberton. Mary Persons High School in my hometown of Forsyth, Georgia, won the state championship in 1980. Went 15-0, the only state championship in the history of the school. They played Elbert County, the first game of the year for some reason.
That?
We road tripped up there. I was in the seventh grade.
I went to a game, covered a game up there once, and they had lightning strike the scoreboard.
Really?
Like at halftime. And so they delayed the second half. Everybody was hanging out in the gymnasium before they go out there. That Granite is a that stuff attracts lightning, is what they say.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I've always heard. Granite is like a magnet for lightning. So you're sitting out there in the granite bowl, yeah. You're sitting duck, so
sitting,
to speak.
Sitting duck,
but,
yeah.
They did finish the game eventually, so and everything. But, yeah, I don't know that I'd want to sit on those seats. I think that you better take a cushion.
That's true. I don't remember exactly. I was in the seventh grade when I went there to a game, so I don't remember. I've been by there a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah. There's a great Mexican restaurant right now downtown Elberton.
I've never eaten there, but
When I was back in the insurance business, I called on a lady, Betty Rampy, up there at Magnolia Estates Assisted Living Home, and I called on her to be a client, and I had lunch up there, and she was a great lady. I enjoyed getting to know her. She passed away a few years ago. But
when you said Mexican restaurant in Elberton, I shook my head. I really do. I got a friend of mine that's from Elberton, I think, talks about eating at a restaurant downtown. But anyway.
Well, that was where my good friend Gary Jones was working when he died a couple of years ago. In fact, I think he had covered a high school football game the night before he died. We worked together with the Athens Banner-Herald for a number of years, and good guy, and I enjoyed getting to know him and spending some time with him and everything, so good deal. Well, we'll talk a little college football when we come back here, and just want to remind everybody that we really like it when you subscribe to us and like us and
share us. Share us,
Put us on social media and say that we're the best-looking podcasting duo in the world.
Best-looking gray-haired podcast duo. Next week, we're going to be a little more fired up about some high school football.
That's
coming
right.
Up.
There you go. All right. We'll be back in a minute here on Sidelines and Headlines. Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
Sidelines.
Headlines.
And we're talking here about college football. And, Jim, it was a great week. Last week, finally, the Georgia Bulldogs played like a four-quarter game.
They did.
Scored 21 points in the second quarter, pulled away from their rival Bulldogs over there in Starkville, Mississippi State. A really good performance for them.
They overcame the Cowbells. If you're a Georgia fan, you got to be happy with that. You
know? Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about this week in a minute, but... But, you know, maybe there's a little bit of peaking at the right time, maybe. Mm-hmm. It all coming together a little bit.
Well, somebody posted on social media somewhere a clip of the defense that was on the field in the second quarter and said there were two seniors on the field
at the time. I saw that, too.
And maybe one junior. The rest were freshmen and sophomores. So it's a young team that is developing and getting better. And, at the beginning of the year, we had some real questions about the offensive line, but I think that line is really coming into its own. And, of course, we saw evidence of that with the way they were able to run the ball against Mississippi State. I mean, we had a guy that got, Frazier got, he didn't get 200 yards, but he got close to it. I mean, that was the best running performance by a single Georgia back in quite a while. And he broke a couple of long runs and really, really looked good. And that explosiveness has been something that's been kind of missing from the Georgia running game. So it was good to see it against Mississippi State. And I still think Gunnar Stockton still played a very efficient game, did well. So,
well, people, Georgia fans' favorite hobby is to gripe about Mike Bobo. But I think, like you said, I like the fact, if I was a Georgia fan, I like the fact that they'll kind of stick to the, they seem like they're going to stick to the running game a little bit, mm-hmm. and kind of make people stop them. Because if you can run the ball, it makes passing the ball a lot easier. It just seems like a lot of these guys, these play callers now, you run two plays and you don't gain many yards, and then you throw it every play all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And they kind of stick to it. I mean, Georgia's got a couple of guys that if they get a little bit of steam going, they're pretty good backs.
And I think part of that is Kirby's mentality. He definitely does not want to abandon the running game. He still wants to be a hard-nosed football team that punishes the other team and makes them pay, so to speak. You got to be ready to play a four quarters of hard football, hard-nosed football against Georgia. But, yeah, I've always been a Bobo fan. I've never been a guy that criticized Mike Bobo. I've always thought he's done a fine job of being the offensive coordinator at Georgia. I think he did a good job probably over at South Carolina and Auburn when he was at those positions. I don't know that he had a lot to work with when he was out at Colorado State as far as putting together an offense out there. But Georgia's always had good numbers.
Well, probably one thing you probably didn't get credit for either, just behind the scenes. I mean, Gunnar Stockton, where he is right now as a player, probably has something to do with the development on the practice field helping him become a better quarterback, a guy that really doesn't have a lot of experience coming into the season. Looks like he's a seasoned quarterback.
And, you know, that Mississippi State game was the classic definition of a trap game, coming between the Florida game, before the Texas game, and didn't seem to faze him at all.
Nope.
They just came out and dominated the game. And so it was a good win for Georgia.
It was.
So tell me about your guys, Auburn. They found an offense, but suddenly the defense disappeared.
Yeah, that's sort of strange the way that happened. The defensive coordinators, all of a sudden the head coach, who, by the way, might be my favorite now to get the job.
He DJ just, Durkin?
Yeah, just know a lot about the guy, but he just listening to him talk. You know, we talked about how when you're the head coach, how you project yourself and the confidence you exude is important. I mean, the guy, he's very, he made some comments like you almost think that behind the scenes somebody told him he might be the guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was talking about the future and next year and we're building. But as far as the game, that was a little bit strange that, you know, Vandy's pretty good.
Well, yeah, how much of it was, you know, Diego Pavia? That was the aspect if they couldn't stop him and the rest of the Vanderbilt offense. It could be that Vanderbilt's just that good as opposed to – but this was the most points they'd given up all year, wasn't it?
It was. And I don't know. As an Auburn fan, I don't know how to feel. I don't know how much you watched the game. But Cam Coleman, number 8, the receiver.
Man. I watched enough to see – you've been talking about him all year. He is the real dude, man.
He just drop back and throw it to him. That's exactly what they did several times, and it worked. You know, the odds are in your favor. He's going to catch it. He's going to get an interference call. You know, that nobody can cover him. I mean, on a 50-50 ball,
when they do cover him, he somehow comes up with
that's
the
what I mean. On a 50-50 ball, he's going out. He's going to out jump. He's going to out wrestle the guy and get the ball. But it'll be interesting. They got an off week, and then they got Mercer, and then they got the Iron. But Mercer clinched the Southern Conference title.
Oh, wow.
This week. And
so bringing up Mercer and Auburn, what's Durkin going to do about his quarterback? Is he going to play, go back to Jackson Arnold, or is he going to play the guy who played last week?
I think he's going to, the guy that played this week. He had.
Well, that means he won't be back next year.
Well, that's right.
Because he will burn a redshirt year.
Yeah.
And
I saw him ask Durkin about that. Yeah. He was just like, you know.
You got to win now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what you got to do. Now, but let me ask you. I got to ask you about Durkin. He's got a history, you know. Up at Maryland.
I know.
He was the coach up there when that young man died. And there was a lot of stuff that came out of that. And so does that in any way concern you?
Not really. I mean, you know. Just like with Freeze, you know, he had baggage, and I mean, he kind of forgave him. You know, Freeze on the surface looked like he sort of faced it and dealt with it. I don't know Durkin personally. I hadn't dug too deep into him, but he seems to. I don't know. I just like his demeanor, and I think he's.
Do you think the Auburn people would be excited and get behind him if he got the job?
Well, I think so. I think one of the factors might be that, you know, he might, you know, he's a player's coach. Could he keep some of the guys on
the guys
roster?
There, yeah.
Keep from leaving in the transfer portal. I did see today where the athletic director, Cohen, said he's talked to 7 or 8 current, I think he said head coaches already about the Auburn job.
Really?
Which is a little strange. I don't know if I believe that. He probably just wants everybody to think he's working hard.
Well, it could be he's talking about not necessarily offering them a job, but tell me who to be looking at, that kind of thing, getting recommendations or whatever.
Right.
So,
well, A&M, you said a few weeks ago, you said you kind of, at this point in the season, you kind of are what you are.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, when really at this point, I mean, A&M.
And they don't have much in front of them. I mean, they've got to play at Texas. They've got to do that. And they play at Arkansas, I think. And I think it's laid out for them to be in the best position. And who knows? They could wind up being the number one seed in this whole thing when it's all said and done.
Yep.
You don't know what's going to happen in the Big 12, Big 10 championship. So let's think about this. Ohio State could lose to Michigan. I mean, they've done it 4 years in a row now.
Very well.
And then Ohio State could beat Indiana, and then that could vault the Texas A&M up to be the number one seed in the whole shebang. So if you watch SEC shorts, it's been kind of funny. They still have that battered syndrome that they're worried about, and you know, they seem to always mess up, but this team has not been messing up. And, you know, I've not seen enough of them to really recognize, okay, I recognize their strengths or weaknesses or that kind of thing. But what I've seen of them, they just look like a good, solid, all-around football team.
They are. Interesting game this week. Of course, Alabama beat LSU and ended up being kind of a humdrum game. Oklahoma had an off week. And Oklahoma and Alabama this week, so that'll be interesting. We'll see if Alabama can keep it going, and then
Of course Oklahoma beat them last year.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure Alabama's going to be remembering that, and they're going to be ready for it. I didn't think Alabama looked that good against LSU though. Like you said, it was kind of a humdrum game, and really LSU's defense kind of rose to the occasion, but then the offense. It's been a season-long problem for them and didn't get any better. It's interesting to watch all these interim coaches to see what impact they have on teams. What about the guy at Penn State? I mean, they came within an eyelash, a toe tap, of beating Indiana.
Speaking of, I think the Auburn receivers and the Indiana receivers had the best catches.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Of the week,
and that was a great catch. And yeah, you looked at it, and the official, he made the right call. I don't know exactly how he was able to do it, but he did, and the replay backed him up. And it was a dramatic catch, and certainly spoiled Penn State's chance to kind of put a little. Well, you know, that was their sixth straight loss. I mean, they've really spiraled downhill this year. And of course, they've had injuries. They lost their quarterback, but that would have been a real chance to throw the brakes on this downfall and maybe get some momentum. And who knows? Maybe their coach, interim guy, gets a little notice.
They came within an eyelash. Talking about all the coaching stuff, Lane Kiffin's either going to stay or go somewhere, and that's going to set into motion. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, two guys. Obviously can't get the same job, but LSU, we talked about what in a lot of ways is maybe the best job available, but don't you think there's a perception out there that LSU is a little bit of a dysfunctional right now with everything that's kind of going on down there and some of the things that are...
I do think there is that, and certainly from the perspective of the media and the public. I mean, when the governor gets involved...
Right.
Athletics, you know that something is just not right. And that's been a historical thing. You go back to the days of Huey Long and the stories he used to tell about him being involved with LSU. And they named an athletic director, haven't they?
They did.
And so they've got a guy, and hopefully the governor will let the AD do his job. But again, I come back, that other guy, he hadn't done bad. They won national championships in baseball, gymnastics, and what else? Women's basketball.
Women's basketball, yeah.
So he wasn't doing a bad job himself. So somebody's going to scoop up a good one, I think, whenever he lands on his feet somewhere. But we'll see.
I heard him saying today the women's basketball coach, what's her name?
Kim Mulkey.
Kim Mulkey didn't show up to the press conference, and they thought that was some kind of symbolic.
Yeah.
She didn't like the new guy.
She's
a piece of work.
She is a firecracker. One of the games that I was, every now and then I asked to be the official scorekeeper at Georgia games when the regular guy, Derek Floyd, he's from Florida, and during the holidays he typically goes down to see his family down in Miami area, and I do a game. I did the LSU women's game the last time they were in Athens.
Ooh,
a couple of years ago.
So
she was right there And it was interesting.
Oh, I bet it was.
To see her up close and personal and just watch her in action. She is Cracker Jack, I'm telling you what. I mean, she knows what she's doing. I mean, she recruits well and coaches them well, and they go out and they win. And, you know, now you've got – it used to be Georgia and Tennessee were the two teams in the SEC, and now it's South Carolina.
South Carolina, LSU.
Two teams that are dominant. But then now you got Texas. They're not going anywhere either.
No.
So –
I know we're going to talk about this week's games. You're never going to believe this. The Presbyterian College Blue Hose went down to Davidson. Did you see that?
No.
Upset. They lost two out of the last three games. And also...
Davidson beat them, yeah.
Oh, man. I had a friend of mine who actually lives here in Athens, Robbie Kirk. He and his wife went up to the game. They're both PC grads. But... And did you see, do you have any connection with Samford football?
I don't. I've heard some stories about Samford doesn't spend any money on their football.
Yeah, I've heard all that. Guy named Keith Hatcher had been their coach for, I think it was in his 11th year. He's from Macon.
Okay.
He's a guy that I know is...
Now, wasn't there a Hatcher who was at Valdosta State?
That was him.
Okay.
He actually was at Georgia Southern for a year.
Okay.
Then he was at Murray State, and then he's been at... He and Kirby are big buddies, so I wonder where he'll land, if he'll be all of a sudden be an analyst at Georgia next year. But he and Kirby coached at Valdosta together. And, you know, Hatcher as a player won that Harlan Hill Trophy, which is basically the Heisman Trophy for Division II. But there's a good guy from my hometown named Sean Bostic, who was on his staff, had been with him. They played together at Valdosta State. So anyway, he got fired this week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at Samford.
But, you know, I've heard that Mercer was paying more for football players than Samford was.
Yeah.
And they were, and Samford players were transferring to Mercer.
Yeah, we talked about
it. So, you know, that's tough. You know, that's where we are in college football now. You've got to figure out the bottom line number. What can you afford? And at a level like Samford and Mercer and Presbyterian, it's a whole different ballgame than it is at the top of the food chain. But even those schools have to decide, how much am I going to allocate to?
Yep.
I mean, South Carolina, for example. You don't think South Carolina is going to allocate some significant resources to keep its women's basketball program in peak condition? Same thing at LSU. I mean, at Texas. So they've got to go beyond that $20 million figure that they're limited to and figure out how to get NIL money from other places that they can funnel into these other programs.
Well, it's funny that, you know, those big time, you know, the cliche is football, men's basketball, you know, traditionally is what's funded everything else. Mm-hmm. But you know, LSU and South Carolina programs like that, the women's basketball team has become a money.
I think,
you know,
Texas draws. Mississippi State used to draw in women's basketball. Mississippi State, of course, baseball.
Baseball.
They had a big alumni baseball game the night before the Georgia game, drew 9,000 people.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine, my best friend, actually, they went out to the game. They went with some Mississippi State people. And he said, people out here, you know, we got a game, football game going on, and, you know, everybody you talk to wants to talk about baseball. You know, he said, I didn't get it, you know. But it's true. But you're like with them, baseball is unique, like women's basketball, mm-hmm. South Carolina or whatever. So,
Yeah. I've never been to a game out there. In fact, I haven't really been to any SEC venues for baseball. I've been up to Clemson for a game up there. Randy Watkins, who's does umpiring and lives here in Athens, a Cedar Shoals alum, he told me one time he thought the best place to go was Arkansas.
Really?
He said they had the greatest environment at Arkansas. And, of course, they came within a drop pop fly of winning the World Series several years ago.
Yep.
And they're still one of the best teams. In fact, weren't they the number one seed last spring?
I think you're right. Yeah.
So, you know, this is a tough league. It doesn't matter what sport you play.
I guarantee
it's a tough league.
It is.
Yeah.
You know,
volleyball's going on right now. We got like three or four teams at the top of the list in volleyball.
Yeah.
So
it all comes back to a lot of it comes back to weather, of all things, you know.
It is important.
Children in the South, I mean, you know, spring football practice week, you know, all those things that we do that maybe they don't do in Wisconsin.
But you know, what why was it not that way 50 years ago? We had good weather 50 years ago, and we didn't have, you go, baseball was dominant on the West Coast, track and field and swimming, and all was West Coast and Midwest and those kind of things. And all of a sudden now, it's all gravitated here.
Well, that's a good point. Well, you know, of course, there's been a lot of population growth.
That's a big part of it. Yeah. Population shift and air conditioning.
That's right.
And let's don't overcomplicate it.
That's right.
We have air conditioning everywhere now, and people can survive the hot summers. And like you said, Georgia's now got, what do we have, 12 million people in the state of Georgia now? There's a lot of people there. That means there's a lot of athletes growing up in the state of Georgia.
I think Kirby understands that, and, you know, just the proximity to Metro Atlanta is just an unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's like LSU being down there near New Orleans, you know.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to Indiana real quick. Did the way that Indiana struggled to get Penn State, did that give you any kind of message?
Not really, because I look at it a little bit the same way I look at A&M, you know. It's like, okay, A&M maybe hadn't had the toughest conference schedule, but they're 9-0, 10-0 or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, at this point in the season, you know, you look at all those teams. Georgia's played some really good teams, but they've squeaked out some wins that may have been a little bit ugly. You know, just if you're a random fan, you know, well, are they really that good? Well, Indiana figured out a way to get it done. What do you think? I mean, do you think, what if they played, I don't know, Georgia next week?
If they played an SEC schedule, if they played an SEC schedule, I don't know if they'd be 10-0 right now. You look, they beat Oregon. Good win. Maybe with the best win of the season even for any team this year, going out to Oregon, winning out there in fairly convincing fashion. But how many times have they played other teams who've had a similar roster makeup of, you know, 4- and 5-star kind of guys, and they just haven't had to do that like you have to do in the SEC practically every week? I mean, there's just no easy wins down here.
I agree completely, but is that an advantage a little bit, like in the playoff? I mean, maybe you talk about how Clemson in past years, you know, maybe they didn't have the gauntlet in the regular season. Maybe they get to the end and they're a little bit in better shape to maybe win one they wouldn't have won during the regular season or something.
But then that leads me to this. You know, I don't know if you saw this. Greg Sankey mentioned this week he was opposed to any automatic qualifying. He says it's playing out right now. That's a mistake. And he's pointing out how the fact there's no Group of Five team even ranked in the top 25 right now. And so somebody is going to get into the 12-team playoff and knock somebody else out
that's not
in the top 12. And he says that's what happens when you give an automatic qualifier. And, you know, the Big Ten says we want four. You get four. Well, who are there four teams from the Big Ten that deserve to be in the playoffs?
There's definitely not four from the ACC. And
well, you know, let's look at the Big Ten. Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon. Would you quibble with any of those being in the playoffs?
No.
Well, then the next team's down. who's it going to be? Michigan?
Yeah, what's Michigan's record?
Michigan is 5-1 in the conference.
But not a great team.
But they are 7-2 overall. And then you've got Southern Cal, 5-1 in the conference, also 7-2 overall. Both those teams are probably thinking, we're playoff worthy. We're playoff deserving. But there's no way that I don't think the Big Ten is going to get five teams in the playoff. Number one, Michigan's got to play Ohio State. Something's got to happen there. Southern Cal's, who do they got? Southern Cal has to play Iowa. They have to go to Oregon, and they get to host UCLA. So if Southern Cal beats Oregon, that could be a play-in game.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
They could bump the loser out of the playoffs, and they get in. But, the big game, Saturday night, here. Let's come back and talk about that in a minute. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right, good deal. We'll be back here on Sidelines and Headlines.
Like us. Watch us. Thank you.
All right. See you in a minute. Hey, we're back here on Sidelines and Headlines. I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
And there is a game coming up Saturday in Athens, Georgia, isn't there, Jim?
I think there is, and I've been told I'm going to go.
Oh, wonderful.
I know I'm not a Georgia Bulldog like you are, but I've been told my wife's a She's got those faculty tickets, and I may be sitting up in the clouds, but I'm going
to
go.
I was trying to think, the lead-up to this Texas-Georgia game, certainly, I mean, we played Alabama earlier this year here. We played Mississippi. It was a great home schedule, but this is the game that everybody said, this is the game. What's the last time we had a game like this, that this kind of lead-up? Was it Notre Dame?
Probably something similar to Notre Dame. It's a little different. Georgia played them, you know, last year, obviously, twice. Right. And then, you know, Texas has two losses. I think people thought they might be, maybe just have one loss at this point. Might make it a little more interesting. But what's your vibe? Texas had an off week. I think that's kind of big.
That is a big thing. And with a young quarterback who's been up and down, that maybe that gives them an extra week to really hone in on a couple of things. And, you know, we saw that Auburn did some different things when they had an off week before the Georgia game. So maybe they'll come out and try to introduce a new package or something like this. I just don't know. But I think we're to that point of the season that I think Georgia, they've seen enough of Texas. They're not going to be really super surprised by anything that Texas does. One of the questions about Texas this year was their offensive line. And frankly, I don't know if that's really been solved, whether they have a great offensive line or not. And that could have been one of the reasons Arch Manning was having such difficulty. He just didn't have time to see the receivers down the field, make the right reads and that kind of thing. But he's played better lately.
He has. And, you know, they got a head coach who's an offensive guy, obviously. I think, like you said, they're not going to come out and show Georgia anything Georgia hadn't seen. But, you know, with the off week, you see a lot, you know, almost every week in the Georgia-Mississippi State game. Mississippi State came out, they had something sort of scripted, and they got up. And I just think, you know, if Texas is as talented as we kind of were told they were in the at the beginning of the year, you know, and if they get it, if they come in and kind of jump on Georgia and got up by two touchdowns, it might be harder for Georgia to deal with that than it was dealing with Auburn or Florida.
That'd be flipping the script of what happened last year in Austin.
That's
Georgia
right.
Georgia went out to a big lead out there. And if you go back and look at the final statistics of the game, Georgia did not really, quote, dominate the game. They won 30-15, but it seemed like they dominated because they got out such a great start.
Yep.
And it's kind of interesting. This series is not very deep. What is this, the ninth time, eighth or ninth time we played?
I know you did a study on the history there. What was the first year they played 50?
First year, 1948.
48.
And that was after the 49. It was in the Orange Bowl at 1949, and Texas beat Georgia 41-28. Now, what I read was that back then, bowl games were not very common. And Georgia had accepted the bid, and Texas, the players, I would read, they preferred to go home for Christmas. But the Texas administration said, we're going to play in that game. And so they were angry, and they took their anger out on Georgia and won the game 41-28 in 1949. Now, they had a home-and-home series in 57 and 58. 57. This is Texas' first trip to Athens. So what happened in 57? They played at Grant Field. Georgia played a home game at Grant Field.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. Well, the transportation and roads of that time were different. And they felt like they could not get a big enough crowd to justify playing a team like Texas unless they played it at Grant Field. They did that two or three times in the late 40s through the 50s of playing a home game at Tex Grant Field.
I had heard that. You know, that's interesting you say that. You know, Auburn, Legion Field in Birmingham became Alabama's pretty much their home stadium for about 20 years or maybe longer. That people forget, Auburn, going way back, they used to play some home games at Legion Field for the reason you're talking about. It was just a bigger city. You know, Auburn was pictured in being out in the country or whatever, and you get more people in the stadium if you play in Birmingham.
Yeah. So. That game in 57 in Atlanta, Texas won that game 26-7, but it was 13-7 Texas going into the fourth quarter. So it was a close game, but Texas pulled it away. There were 13 fumbles in the game. Texas lost two of them, and Georgia lost four and threw an interception in the game. So Georgia drove 30 yards for a third quarter score. Charlie Britt passed to Jimmy Orr for a touchdown. Now, do those names mean anything to you?
I know who they are. I've heard them.
Of course, Jimmy Orr went on and played for the Baltimore Colts. Yep. He was opposite
Raymond Berry.
He was Johnny Unitas is one of his favorite receivers. But Charlie Britt, he made his mark in Hollywood. He was on the Ozzie and Harriet show.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
He was a fraternity brother with either Rick Nelson or one of those guys. He would come on every now and then. And, of course, they maximized his southern accent. He was playing with the Los Angeles Rams. So he was on the West Coast, and that's how he kind of got introduced into that. And he was did a short little acting career.
Where's he from?
He's from Augusta, I think. And I think he went later back and did TV in Augusta.
Where's Orr from?
I don't have any idea where Jimmy Orr's from. I really don't know. I'm thinking of Jimmy Pitts, who was a basketball player.
Well, you know where Francis Tarkington's from, and the next year is when.
Yep, that was 58 in Austin, Texas. That was the season opener, and Texas won that game 13-8. Now, I didn't mention this in the game that Georgia lost. On the extra point attempt, they fumbled the snap. And Ken Cooper picked up the fumbled snap for Georgia and drop kicked it through the goal
post. Through the goal post?
For an extra point.
Really?
How many times have you seen a drop kick? I mean, I've never seen one live.
You know, I've never seen one live either. I think the last drop kick, probably in the history of football, Doug Flutie did one when he played for the Patriots.
How about that?
I saw something, and it was like a joke. They were just, go try to do it, and he did it. He made it. And that, I guess it was an extra point. Anyway.
Yeah. So, but in 58, they played in Austin, Texas, and Texas was winning the game. And Fran Tarkenton, as you know, they punted Georgia down to the 5-yard line. And the story he tells is the Georgia starting quarterback was just sitting on the bench. And Tarkenton had been after Butts to put him in the game, and Butts would not do it, and he just put himself in.
Yep.
And the substitution rules of that day were, if you came out, you could not go back in until the next quarter.
To the next quarter? I thought it was the next series.
So I think that's the way it was. So they went on a 95-yard, 21-play drive. It spanned the end of the third quarter and beginning of the fourth quarter. And you can watch that drive on YouTube. And, in fact, I put it on my Facebook, a link on my Facebook page. You can watch every play on that drive. And one of the interesting things about that drive is that Fran Tarkenton, the passing master, I think threw it four times out of 21 plays. And one of those was he was about to get sacked, and he threw it off his back foot, falling backwards, and somehow completed it. They threw a pass to, he completed a pass to Jimmy Vickers for the touchdown, and then he threw for an extra point. The first two-point conversion in Georgia football history.
Really?
Because that was the first year that
you could do it.
Play was
legal. Okay. I didn't, that's and they went ahead trivia, didn't they?
8-6 or 8-7. But then Texas came back and won.
But in the rest of the story, Tarkenton was bitter about they took him back out of the game after that, right?
Well, from what I understand, he did not play the next week at all. And he says that he and Pat Dye were ready to transfer. Assistant coach kicked him out of it.
What was the guy's name? He told the story. They went to the third player that was with him. It was from Stone Mountain. Mm-hmm. What was the guy's name? Anyway, went to his house, and I think Pat Dye's older brother was one of the people that helped talk him out of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. But anyway, but, they stayed, and of course the rest is history. 1959, Georgia won the SEC championship. Was Butts' last great team. The 60 team was 6-4 and was a pretty good team, but not quite up to the standards of the 59 team. But then, of course, Fran went on and became a household name in NFL football.
I see Fran pop up on social media. He still looks like he's doing great.
Yeah, I tell you, the guy is Father Time. He's got nothing on Fran Tarkin.
It doesn't.
He is a remarkable individual.
Yeah,
I've had a chance to talk to him and interview him a few times. When I worked on the book on Colburn Kelly, I interviewed him because he was a Y boy for a few years. He moved here in Athens when he was about 11 or 12 years old, so he was only a Y boy for a couple of years, but he did come under the influence of Colburn Kelly.
He talks in his that documentary, The SEC Story, about what an influence Colburn Kelly was on him.
Yeah, yeah. So then the two teams did not play then. For a long time. Do you know the next time they played?
1980, January, New Year's Day, 1984.
That's right. And, of course, Georgia, that was the first time Georgia beat Texas. John Lastinger, 17-yard run.
It's always 10-9 in
Dallas.
That's
right. What time is it in Dallas? There was a fumble on a punt that gave Georgia the ball late.
Was the guy, Gary Moss, was he the guy that recovered the fumble?
Yeah, he's from up in White County. Yeah, was recruited by Ray Goff, and they came down and won the game 10-9, and then they did not play again until the Sugar Bowl in 2019.
Yep. Texas won that game, right?
Texas won that game. The most interesting thing that happened in that game was Bevo attacking.
Yeah,
Hugga
attacked Hugga. That's right. That's right.
And then after the game, the quarterbacks Sam Erlinger said, "We're back." But they weren't.
They weren't back, yeah.
They actually had another losing season a couple of years after that. So, but then, of course, last year the two games were two signature games. Georgia played well in that first game in Austin, and you had that incident where they throwing all the water bottles on the field and did not get penalized for it. And then, of course, the Gunnar Stockton coming out party in Atlanta at the SEC championship game.
Not to go back, because as an Auburn fan, I'll dwell on this too much, but going back to 80, that was the end of the 83 season, January 1, 84. If Texas won that game, they'd have been national champions.
Yeah, because Nebraska lost that night.
And you know, from an Auburn fan's perspective, you know, Auburn was number 3, Texas was number 2, Nebraska was number 1. Miami's number 5. They beat number 1.
And they got bumped up to number 1.
Nebraska's second. Auburn finishes third. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I know. They felt to.
Auburn got
was Tupperville the coach then?
No, Coach Dye.
Oh, Dye. Patrick.
And they played an unbelievably tough schedule that year. But I know we're not talking about Auburn, but my point was to bring that back up. Georgia basically took a national championship away from Texas by beating
them. Yeah, it was a very painful loss for Texas. And both those losses last year were painful for Texas, no question about it. Now, Texas wound up getting into the playoffs anyway, but they would have loved to have thrown out their chest and say, "We won the SEC the first year we were in it." And certainly we didn't want that to happen for them. And so, you know, Gunnar Stockton, that was his coming out party. And then, of course, the last play of the game, Carson Beck had to come back in with a gimpy arm and make a handoff and to get the win. So a pretty heroic performance by Carson Beck. He wasn't even sure he could lift his arm.
Well, I'm like, you know, talking about Texas having the off week. I think that's a big deal. I think sometimes it's a big deal when you play a good team the week after they lose a game. I mean, you look back at Urban Meyer, Steve Spurrier, Nick Saban. They don't lose two games in a row.
Yeah.
But where I was going with that is Texas getting beat by Georgia, or Georgia beating Texas twice in the season last year, that was – I don't know if that was bad. Shame on Texas for letting that happen, or if that was just a great job by Georgia having to beat the same team twice. Mm-hmm. That's tough.
Yeah, it is. You know? It is hard. And the way the SEC is set up now, that could certainly happen again. That doesn't look like it's going to happen. – Yeah, I mean, it looks like Alabama and A&M are headed for an undefeated showdown in Atlanta, unless something weird happens. And I don't foresee that. I mean, A&M has still got to win some games. Alabama, who they got left? They got Oklahoma and Auburn.
Auburn, yeah. They can lose twice and still have the head-to-head, you know, because they got – They would have to lose twice. Which
exactly.
Probably not going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Not going to happen. Well, of course, the other aspect of this Georgia game has been the Arch Manning story. Heavily recruited by Georgia. Really, from everything I've read, came down to Georgia and Texas. And, of course, he picked Texas. And he comes from one of the most elite football bloodlines in America. And Georgia has a history with his family. We played Arch Manning, Peyton Manning, and Eli Manning, and now Arch Manning. So we've got done them all, and I looked it up. We're 6-6 against the Manning family.
Well, Arch would probably tell you those two last year don't count.
No, well, he did not have much to do with either one of those games. He did. He had a cameo in that game in Austin. I don't even know if he played in the game at Atlanta. I just don't know.
And
for that matter, Peyton did not have much to do with the first time the game that he played against Georgia in 94. He was not a factor in that.
Yeah, that was the guy that Helton that went on to the great baseball career.
Helton, yeah.
Was quarterback for Tennessee that day.
Yeah. So, but the next year, Georgia went to Knoxville, and Peyton led them to a 30-27 win. They went on a drive at the end of the game and kicked a field goal with 10 seconds left. To win the game. Peyton was 26 of 38 for 349 yards, two touchdowns, intercepted by
Kirby Smart. Yep.
The other quarterback on the Georgia side, Mike Bobo, 19 of 32 for 276 yards. So not a shabby day for Mr. Bobo against Mr. Manning. Now, the next 2 years, Peyton Manning pretty well owned Georgia. They won 29-17 in Athens. He threw for 371 yards, and then in 97, they won 38-13, and he threw for 343 yards. I hadn't added up, but he threw for over 1,000 yards in three games against Georgia. So Peyton was 4-0 against Georgia. His dad, Archie, was 2-1. He lost his first game against Georgia in 68 in Athens, 21-7.
And 2 years later, Georgia beat him. You told me that's when you interviewed him,
That's right. That came back in 70. Ole Miss won, 31-21. And that was when I got my exclusive post-game interview with
him on the bus.
Now, Eli never beat Georgia. He was 0-3. In 2000, he only threw for 88 yards, 5 of 12. So he must have come off the bench in that game. But in 01... he threw for 233 yards, but he had two touchdowns and two interceptions. Georgia won by 20, and then they won by 14 the next year when he was 12 of 25 for 176 yards. So we're 6-6 against the Mannings, who I understand are all going to be in town this weekend.
Oh, really?
The rumor, I've heard they've rented a particular bed and breakfast somewhere in town. I'm not going to reveal the location because I don't want people to harass them any more than necessary. But it'll be a big day for the Manning clan to come in. They may have been traveling around to all the games for all I know.
I think they pretty much do.
Yeah.
Which, good for them. Can you imagine Archie Manning? I mean, how many great times he's had watching his sons and his grandson play ball.
Yeah. Are there other Manning grandchildren that are athletes that we've heard about? I don't know.
Peyton actually has a son that's maybe a ninth grader I think he's going to the Baylor school up in Chattanooga.
Okay.
Is it Baylor or Macaulay? One of the two up there. And I heard Kirby joking about, or maybe somebody told me that Kirby said that Peyton's wanting to say, recruit my son. I guess he's a quarterback too. But, I'm sure if Tennessee has anything to do with it, he'll end up in Knoxville.
Well, it could be, but both of those programs up there are solid programs. You know, Will Muschamp's son played up at Baylor. He played against Prince Avenue when they played up there several years ago and almost won the game by himself. Prince Avenue was lucky. They caught Baylor the week after they played Macaulay. I mean, that's the Chattanooga showdown there. You put those two together. So that had to be a little bit of a letdown by the time Prince Avenue got up there.
I think Eli's children are younger. Arch has a brother that also goes to the University of Texas. It's obviously not an athlete. Cooper, Arch's daddy, was obviously a good athlete. Most people have heard the story about him. He had a career-ending injury. But Mama, whatever her name is, was a great. I think she was a college volleyball player.
Okay.
And was a really good athlete. I can't remember the whole story, but I think there's some good genes running through that family.
they do well. Do well. So, if you had to handicap the game, how do you think it's going to go? Do you think Texas could get out to a big lead? Is that you predicting that, or is that just
who knows? I think Georgia's like a 6.5-point favorite.
They are.
You can tell
maybe
me
that's a home field advantage, maybe.
Yeah. And that's a big deal, you know. But you know, Georgia went out there and won last year, so who knows? But I'd believe, and you can tell me I'm wrong next week. I think Texas has got a really good chance to win. I don't have any money, but if I had some money to bet, I'd put it on Texas.
Well, unquestionably. I mean, they're a solid program. They got great coaches, great athletes.
I think they feel like they need this game.
This is a must win for Texas.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure it's a must-win for Georgia. They've still got, you know, they got to play Charlotte, which is automatic. But then if they lose to Texas, then they really have to beat Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
They got to beat, and that's no given right now the way that Tech's playing. Speaking of Tech, they go up to Boston College this week,
Alumni Stadium.
And all of a sudden they're sitting in pretty in that ACC.
They're like 2-touchdown favorite up there or something, I saw.
But they've got to play Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And it could be the winner of that game. Could be the ACC representative in the playoffs. And I don't know if Miami has a chance to sneak into the top 12. I mean, they did beat Notre Dame. Is that a good win? I guess so.
Whose game day is at Pittsburgh this week? Who plays Pittsburgh? Miami? Who's playing Pittsburgh?
Is that Notre Dame at Pittsburgh? I think it's Notre Dame.
Notre Dame at Pittsburgh.
Notre Dame's at Pittsburgh this week, yeah. So that's probably a play-in game for Notre Dame. They got to win that game.
Well, we can talk about this on another episode, but you know, people talking about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a great football town.
Really?
It is.
Now, how do you know that?
Well, I mean, just Western Pennsylvania. Look at all the guys that have come out of there. You know, Georgia, of course, everybody remembers them playing the 76 Sugar Bowl with Dorsett, but Georgia played Pitt in a home and home, I think, before that.
They played when Dorsett. They didn't play home and home. He came here in 73. His first college football game was against Georgia.
Really? I didn't know it was his first game.
And it wound up being a tie game. And that 73 team was Andy Johnson's senior year. And they were really hopeful of having a great season. And that was the team that went out to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, was winning in the fourth quarter. Don Golden punted. They roughed him. They didn't call the roughing the punter. So Georgia had to wind up giving up the ball, and Alabama came down and scored. Georgia was trying to come back. They threw it to Kevin Hartman, a little out route, and they called him out of bounds. I was on the sidelines. He took two steps and then went out of bounds. But Alabama scored again, and it really cut the heart out of that Georgia team. They wound up losing to Vanderbilt and Kentucky back-to-back. Came back and beat Condridge Holloway in Tennessee with a great comeback win up there. I think they beat Florida, lost to Auburn. I can't remember which it was, one of those two. And wound up going and playing Maryland in the Peach Bowl where they won that game.
Well, that's an interesting – I didn't realize. Tony Dorsett's first game in his career.
Game.
And, you know, when Herschel broke
and
the
– His first game of his career and his last game of his career against Georgia.
And when Herschel broke the freshman rushing record in 1980, he broke
Tony Dorsett's record.
That's right. But Pittsburgh, if you read – and, of course, I was in the 70s when I was coming up and becoming a football fan, you almost had to – the Falcons were no good, so you either had to be a Steeler fan or a Cowboy fan. I chose the Steelers. But, you know, of course, they did their thing.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, it was. They did their thing. But I just – that Western Pennsylvania, that whole, you know, all the guys that are from that area, I'm just – I've always just a football family.
Well, now, where is Charlie Trippi from? Was he from up in that area?
He is.
And Frank Sinkwich is from Ohio. But I think Trippi was from the area up in there.
Anyway, but you know, you got Marino, Montana, Jim Kelly.
Joe Montana, was he from there?
Yeah, Beaver Falls.
Georgia recruited him heavily.
Yeah.
Sam Mervos, who used to be the strength coach at Georgia years and years ago, told me that they recruited Montana. And I think Montana was Catholic, and that was the thing that swayed him to going to Notre Dame. But he said he thought Georgia had a good chance to get him other than that. Now, just think how that would have been. Well, Joe Montana had come to Georgia.
He would have had to learn to hand it off a little more. They actually let him
maybe Georgia would have learned to pass a little more. You never can tell.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, boy. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to this game.
Well, you're going, obviously.
I'll be there in the press box.
Well, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, I'm kind of just kidding. But my wife's got the two faculty tickets. I said, I'm not going up there and sitting in the 600. I'm scared of heights. She taught school at North Gwinnett High School in Suwannee for 26 years. One of the resource officers at the school works security down on the field during the game. So he's gotten us on the sidelines a couple of times. We've kind of talked him into it. So she's got visions of a selfie with Matthew McConaughey. So I'll text you if we get the picture. Well, I may not be in the picture. She finds McConaughey.
We need to put that on sidelines and headlines.
And if I make it on the field, I'll look for the Mannings.
Does he come to every game?
I don't know. He may not even be here, but I would think he would be. You know, that's kind of his little thing.
It is. He's their face of their fans that he's become. Did he go to school there?
I think he did.
Okay.
I think he did. I think he actually got a degree there, believe it or not. You know, some of those celebrities affiliate with the school. Mm-hmm. But tell me, what do you think? Your opinion on this one's more important than mine.
Well, I like what I saw of Georgia last week. Maybe they're peaking at the right time, and maybe they're doing well. Again, I like what I'm seeing out of the offensive line. The thing that concerns me a little bit is we weren't tested in the secondary too much last week. I'm still a little iffy at what we can do against the pass. Can we get a pass rush on Arch Manning? Can we make him double clutch? Can we make him throw under pressure? That's going to be a real key. We were able to do that last week at Mississippi State. So if Georgia can get a good pass rush, and they continue to make the advances they've made with offensive line and can that move the football, I feel good about our chances. Now, it's a toss-up game. Either team could win, and I won't be surprised by any result unless it's a runaway, unless one team runs away from the other, and that will surprise me.
Well, for years, I would kind of poke fun at the Georgia fans. I didn't think Georgia was necessarily the toughest place to play for an opponent in a big game, but I think in recent years, it has become.
I know exactly what you mean. I agree.
And a night game, it'll be worked to Georgia's advantage.
They'll be charged up. They'll be ready to go. It's going to be an exciting environment, and it's going to be one of the most anticipated games at Georgia. You're going back all the way to 1929 when Yale came. This is going to be one of those people have had on their calendar for a long time, and there's not going to be left empty seats in this stadium at the beginning of the game, and there won't be any at the end of the game unless somebody just routes them.
Well, I think it'll be a four-quarter game.
I do, too.
Whoever wins.
Yeah, there we go. Well, hey, we'll break it down when we come back next week. So
that's right. It'll be a big weekend.
You want to come out on the limb?
All right. Well, probably more Georgia people. I don't want to get shot or anything. I'm saying Horns 31, Dogs 28.
Okay, I'll just reverse that score. Okay. I'll take Georgia 31-28. How's that go?
All right,
good deal. Well, we'll see how it turns out, and I know you guys will be watching that, and hope you'll come back with us next week on Sidelines and Headlines. We'll be looking at more results from the first round of the high school football playoffs, looking at the second round. We won't be talking too much about the mighty Charlotte team that Georgia will be playing. We'll be more talking about what they did against Texas, and maybe looking ahead even to the enemy, the game over in Atlanta. But thanks a lot for checking us out here on Sidelines and Headlines.
Watch us, like us. Thanks for watching tonight. Email us.
God bless. We'll talk to you later.